Burns and Gambo starts now.
Straight up 2 o'clock on this Wednesday afternoon. Good afternoon and welcome into today's edition of the Burns and Gambo Show. Here on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station, we are live from the Auction Community Studios. My name is Dave Burns. Alongside the one, the only, John Gambadoro. Hi, Gambo.
Burnsy, what's going on?
Were you able to procure a Whopper sandwich from Larry Gatos in the newsroom?
I was not. They're giving out Whoppers. You know what? That was always my favorite sandwich, too.
More than the DLT? Or what is it? McDLT?
The McDLT was probably my favorite. But they did away with that 100 years ago. So, like 100. Probably, 100.
Did burgers exist 100 years ago?
Did you exist 100 years ago?
That's a good question.
It was a long time ago. They did away with them.
I
tell my wife, too, the Whopper was always my favorite. The Whopper with cheese was always my favorite.
So, what's up? Why didn't you get one?
I don't know. I got to do a show.
What do we got to do to get a Whopper around here?
Larry Gatos has to do a show, too, and yet he was walking around.
Handing out Whoppers.
Was it Gatos? Because that's a Chad Benson move. He's done that in the past,
really?
Passing out Whoppers it's Christmas candy.
He's Santa Claus?
There goes Gambo.
Hey, where's these Whoppers? Come on, I want a Whopper. Let's go, Chad. Come on.
Gambo yelling out into the newsroom now. People are trying to work out there. Gambo really just doesn't care at all.
No.
He's just yelling in the newsroom for Chad Benson of KTAR 92.3 to bring us a Whopper.
Let's go.
You know, closed mouths don't get fed.
Let's go.
So
that's true. Squeaky wheels get the grease.
Three bags of Whoppers that they're giving out?
Okay, so not counting the McDLT.
That was always my favorite.
Which was actually your favorite because it kept the hot side hot and the cold side cold.
That was my favorite, yeah.
You're going to claim the Whopper is your favorite.
It is. I'm not saying that the others aren't good, but that was always my favorite.
Okay.
That was my favorite.
Quick round the table. Everybody's favorite fast food hamburger. Jordan Bird, you first.
I go off the reservation with this one. Whataburger.
Ooh, that's a quality selection.
That double with cheese?
No.
That's In-N-Out.
That's In-N-Out.
No, the Whopper, the Whataburger's got a double.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. But if you say double, normally that's synonymous with In-N-Out.
Which is my selection.
Which would be my selection as well. Double animal style.
That's what Chelsea would pick, would be In-N-Out. She loves In-N-Out.
Love.
I always like the Whopper more. Sorry.
No, you don't need to apologize for it.
I'm offended.
Sorry, not sorry. I mean, look, on any given day, you put a Big Mac in front of me and temptation. Oh, no, I the Big Mac speaks to me. It speaks to my, childhood.
That's the thing. Whatever you put in front of me, I'm probably going to take you up on it.
I could still do it.
Two all-beef patty special sauce on a cheese
bun.
Amazing.
Can you do that? Two all-beef patty special sauce, lettuce, cheese, pickles, onions on a sesame seed bun.
That was the Big Mac song
song
for a while. Yeah, no, it was a thing for a while. Yeah,
that was only 60 years ago, though. That's that was only 60 years ago.
All right, so while Gambo waits for his Chad Benson delivery, that's not like Chad's got anything better to do, like host a radio show from 2 until 6 over there, right? It's he just bring you Whoppers. That's what he's got.
Should be.
Let's weigh in on our top story of the day here on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Burns and Gambo, the weigh-in.
Over to Cam Johnson. Cam Johnson at three-point range. Over on the far side to Torrey Craig in the corner. They get it to Payne. Now to Saric. High arching turnaround 14-footer. Swish, it's good. Out to Payne. Payne on the drive. Payne scoops. Shot good. He took it right through the Miami defense and put it off the glass and in. And the third quarter is going to come to a screeching halt. And the Suns will have their biggest lead up by 11. Oh, brother. Handling it out front. Payne gets it out to Jake Crowder. Crowder goes inside. This is out to Carter. Three-pointer on the way. Shazam! Javon Carter.
Not a Devin Booker highlight to be found. Not a Chris Paul highlight to be found.
No, they didn't play.
A Mikal Bridges highlight to be found.
They sat all three of those guys.
DeAndre Ayton probably should have had a highlight in the montage, but it wouldn't have fit with the theme. Bench players ruled the night last night for the Phoenix Suns as they beat the Miami Heat by 20 in downtown Phoenix. Gambo, I'm going to go ahead. Say what you got to say about this game.
I mean, it is exactly the type of win that James Jones visioned when he put this team together. I want to win a game with my bench. I want to win several games with my bench. That is the typical win. They got 17 points total out of Devin Booker, Chris Paul, and Mikal Bridges. Mikal Bridges had no points. Chris Paul had four. And they won that game, and they beat a very good team, and they beat the hell out of them. You know, they beat them going away.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just they struggled with them a little bit in the first quarter, and then in the end of the first half, they kind of got up a little bit. Then in the third quarter, they really got it going. They built that lead up, and then they held on to that lead. And in a fourth quarter, again, Miami was never able to make a comeback, you know, like other teams have. The Suns were able to pretty much hold on to that lead throughout. You know, I thought it was basically over in that fourth quarter. I mean, DA had that, you know, tip in off a Cam miss that put him up 101-83. Like, okay, they're by 18 with 3 minutes left. This thing's done. It's over.
Yeah. You know what? There have been 39 of them, 39 wins so far this year for the Phoenix Suns. And I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I remember all of them. That last night was one of my favorite wins of the Suns this year.
Yeah, you said that. Well, do you know it was?
For the reasons you just said, Book had a terrible game. Mikal Bridges was non-existent in that game. The turnovers, that was a sloppy mess of a basketball game last night. What, they have 21 of them last night, which I think I read in Kellen Olsen's game story was like the first time in the last 14 games they had more than 15 turnovers. So it was just, and it didn't matter. None of it mattered. Booker's off night, so what? Mikal Bridges off, so what?
Yep.
Chris Paul didn't put a stamp on, so what? They turned the ball over 21 times, so what? It didn't matter. Their bench was dominant, and they destroyed a really good Miami Heat. That was one of my favorite wins of the season last night. It really was. What were you going to say?
Which bench player do you think had the biggest impact?
Well, you know me, I'm partial to Dario, but it's not him. I think it was Cameron Payne.
I think so, too.
His fingerprints were all over that game.
Yeah. He was great running that team. I mean, just running the floor, hitting three-pointers. I thought Torrey Craig in the fourth quarter, you know, he ran the floor, he laid it in, got a great pass from Cameron Payne. That's the one where Butler got hurt on the play, injured his ankle, and then he hits another three-pointer. So that was, like, everybody contributed.
Sure.
But Payne, I thought Payne kind of delivered the dagger in the third quarter.
They did this on the postgame show on Bally Sports Arizona, Tom and Tom. Cameron Payne was a plus 16. Cameron Johnson was a plus 21. Torrey Craig was a plus 21. Dario Saric was a plus 21. Javon Carter was a plus 23. They all absolutely got the job done last night. Though I will say, watching that game, especially that fourth quarter when Torrey Craig started doing his thing, all I could think about was you asking the question about 2 weeks after the trade deadline, will the Phoenix Suns have made the most impactful acquisition of any team at the trade deadline? Now, what Aaron Gordon's doing up in Denver and what Denver's doing with Aaron Gordon, there's something to be said about that too, right? So, I mean, we got to wait till the end until we know. Torrey Craig has been a very impactful acquisition for the Phoenix Suns, especially Abdul Nader has missed 13 straight games at this point, right? 13 straight,
last
I believe.
Night was 13.
Yeah, last night was 13 in a row. They have needed every single bit of Torrey Craig in these games. I loved what Monty said after the game when he was asked about how comfortable he is when Book or CP3 aren't on the floor. I like this metaphor here.
I mean, it just depends. Sometimes there's a comfort level. Sometimes I'm about as nervous as a long-tailed cat in a room full of rocking chairs, man. You know, it just depends on the situation. You know, I'm just being honest with you. There are times where there's a comfort level with the bench because of the way they're playing and the look that they have. And then there's times where both Book and Devin are off of the floor and I'm, you know, kind of looking to the side, looking at Willie to see if I should get him back in. It just depends. I think anybody would be comfortable with those two on the floor. So it just depends on the situation.
A long-tailed cat in a room full of rocking chairs. Chris Paul was asked about it after the game, and he expressed no such concerns. And I loved what he said after the game, too.
We have a team, you know, like a real team. Like, we lean on each other. We trust each other. And I think that starts from practice. I think that starts, you know, with the way we communicate and talk to each other. And, you know, all these situations, you never know what's going to happen in the playoffs. You never know foul trouble. Things like this can happen. So it's always nice to see how you respond.
Yeah, I think that they responded. I think that they were happy to just let those guys, you know. Boy, it's nice when you've got to do all the work to have somebody else do it and give you a little bit of a reprieve, right? A little bit of a break.
Sure.
Man, you don't have to rely on any of those guys to do anything. And the bench came through 65-41. The bench outscored the starters 65-41. The one starter that did really well was DeAndre Ayton. I mean, he was really good again.
Played really well.
He did.
He played really, really well. Yeah. I mean, to the point.
Go ahead, say it.
I was going to say to the point it's been so consistent and so steady now for the last few weeks that I noticed during the broadcast last night. Remember, there was that 2-on-1 with Paul and Ayton, and Paul kind of threw it up to Ayton at the rim for like a
the one he missed?
Yeah, the one he missed. Yep. And EJ and K-Ray kind of started chuckling about it a little bit, and Eddie even said, look, you can laugh about it now because he's been catching so many of those, and because he's become so reliable around the basket, you can chuckle about it now because you know he's going to catch those, right? It's before it was a problem. Now it's become a problem that seemingly has been almost solved, and so you can laugh about it every now and then when you kind of screw one up like that. And I thought that was kind of a revealing sort of statement on where we've come with DeAndre Ayton. That it used to be a failure like that. Oh, God, DeAndre Ayton, he can't catch a cold out there. And instead we kind of laugh about it now because he's been so reliable in those moments.
I had a guy on Twitter said, listen, when you were sticking up a DA, I just wasn't buying any of it. But you know what? I think you're right. The only thing I said with DA was just patience. Like, yeah. You know, he's young. You got to be somewhat patient. You don't want to kick the guy to the curb just because, you know, you haven't liked what he did in his first 50, 60, 70 games. Give the kid some time. He's going to be a really good player. He's a really good player now. Who knows what the ceiling is for him?
He's played very, very, very well these last few weeks. There's just absolutely no denying that. You do not have to be a star athlete to get your signing bonus. What you need to do is text the word bonus, B-O-N-U-S, right now to 620-620. Listen for your name this afternoon at 3:35 and win $500. That's bonus. Text it right now. To 620-620. It's the Arizona Sports signing bonus. Even though the Diamondbacks lost, it was a great sight to see Zach Gallen back on the mound for his team yesterday. Are those the silver linings that are going to define this season for the Diamondbacks? That's coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Gallen ready and the 2-2 pitch. Swing and a miss, strike him out. Gallen strikes out the side. And that's 8 strikeouts on the afternoon for the right-hander.
They didn't win. They lost the game.
Got swept.
I don't want to steal his work or plagiarize his work. God knows I've tried that before in high school, and I'm not doing that again.
Oh, boy.
So I want to give credit where credit's due. Zach Buchanan of The Athletic wrote this really kind of thoughtful piece about the Diamondbacks today in which he said, look, The takeaways aren't even that they lost the two games against the A's. Like, this season might not even be about wins and losses for the Arizona Diamondbacks because no one's expecting them to win a lot of games. This season is going to be about the silver linings that come with moments like Zach Gallen yesterday, that come with moments when Corbin Martin is called up later this season, you would presume, and let's see how he does. When J.B. Bukauskas, if he gets called up at some point, let's see how he does it. Now, we might not actually be paying attention to wins and losses that much this year. We'll just be looking for little silver lining moments like Zach Gallen's outing yesterday to give us some sense of hope that at some point things are going to get a little better with this baseball team.
I think right now, I think J.B. Bukauskas is not that far away from joining the team. I think he could be the next guy that they call up. You got to remember, they got three guys out right now at the bottom. Their 7, 8, and 9 guys aren't here. And that's really, really difficult for the Diamondbacks and Torey Lovello to kind of manage through that because they expected it to be Devenski, and then he turns it over to Tyler Clippard or vice versa, and then you go to Joaquin Soria to close out the game. Now, Soria's throwing. He's about 2 weeks away from what I'm understanding today. He's about 2 weeks away. Tyler Clippard is not close at all. When they said 6 weeks, that was 6 weeks away from reevaluating him.
Yeah.
So he's the furthest away. And Devenski, it's a personal issue, and nobody really knows. So I have no information on when Devenski's going to come back.
We asked Torey about him yesterday, and even Torey was like, yeah, we're not, you know.
No, it's a personal thing, and I understand that, and nobody's going to comment on it. So they don't know when they're going to get that guy back. But Joaquin Soria is throwing. He's about 2 weeks away. Clippard, you're not going to get him back for a while. So you got to rely on, you know, Ginkle and Crichton and guys like that. But I do think if this continues to be struggle, I don't think J.B. Bukauskas is that far away from coming up and being the next guy that can be given an opportunity.
Well, because late inning situations, they don't really match up very well right now. I mean, I Stefan Crichton, we've seen him do it in the past. Kevin Ginkle, we've seen him do it in the past, but they're not really getting it done this year. And Torey Lovello is hoping that one of those guys will step up. But that's sort of my point and sort of by extension Zach's point of all. When Bukauskas does come up, that's going to be a big deal. That's going to be a big deal because he was killing it in the spring, right?
Yes.
I mean, he was electric, and that word gets thrown a lot around baseball a ton.
He was their best pitcher.
But he was electric in spring. It's going to be exciting when he comes up. Will they win the game the day he pitches, the day he makes his debut? does it matter? You know, and that's kind of the point is that it's, I don't know how many of these games they're actually going to win. It's all about finding usable pieces for the future that when you do start spinning this around a little bit, and that's what made Zach Gallen's outing so impressive yesterday. That dude hadn't pitched in 3 weeks, and it didn't look like he had missed a day. Not a day.
Well, yeah, that was great. I mean, because he's just such a big part of what they do. He's their ace. Like, he's the guy that you want to give the ball to, and you expect that you're going to win that baseball game when he gets the ball. Going back to J.B. Bukauskas, I mean, he didn't give up a single base runner in the spring. Like, he didn't give up one base runner. Fastball was up in, you know, mid-90s fastball, didn't give up a single. He had four outings, and not once did a guy get on base against him. So when he got sent down, it was, well, why? And then a lot of people just speculated that it was the, you know, the time served.
Starting his clock, his major league clock, and minor league service time and manipulation. Right. Torrey denied that when he was on with us.
Yep.
Mike Hazen on the record has denied that that had anything to do with it, but it happened, and I don't want to accuse the Diamondbacks of doing it. I just, you know, for the record, they've denied it. But man, stuff like that happens in Major League Baseball all the time, right? Because they're trying to manipulate how long they've got control of a certain
guy. So when he got sent down, it did raise some flags. Like, what's going on here? I mean, if he's good enough to, like, he was killing it. Like, he did everything. There's nothing he could have done to win a spot. He was just great. So he doesn't have a lot of experience in the majors, and they went with other guys, Yoan Lopez and Kevin Ginkle and obviously Crichton and the guys that they have. But I don't think Bukauskas is that far away from being called up and giving them an opportunity. So we'll keep our eye on that. You're right. You want to see some of these younger guys get some opportunities. Good to get Gallen back. All eyes are on Madison Bumgarner right now and whether he can make any adjustments to get anybody out. But I think with the way Gallen pitched and the way Weaver pitched, even though they didn't do very well in that series against the A's, you know, win-wise, there's some hope that at least those, if we, you know, you want to see these guys pitch well. Can you imagine if Weaver pitches extremely well and your 1-2 punch next year is Gallen and Weaver? Okay, can Weaver be a number two? He throws the ball freaking hard. He throws the ball 95, 96 miles an hour.
Yep.
I mean, is there any reason to think that he can't be a number two?
I'll give you another silver lining to this season. Right before he hurt his hamstring, and it was Ketel Marte. I mean, I know it was only a week before he hurt it, and so it's, you know, small sample size and all, but Ketel Marte was starting to very quickly show that last season was a complete aberration for him. That last season was not who he is and that he was going to pick up right where he left off. Again, is that going to lead to wins in 2021? Probably not. And is that ultimately what guys like Torrey Lovello are going to be judged on? Yes, that's ultimately what guys like Torrey Lovello are going to be judged on. But if we're looking, and I'm not, and the line, I want to do it justice. The line from Zach's story said it better than I could. The Diamondbacks may be a team rapidly becoming practiced at finding silver linings and polishing them until they outshine anything more distressing. The return of the ace surely represents the best news the team has received all season. In other words, doesn't matter we got swept by the A's. Zach Gallen pitched well. Doesn't matter we're 4-8 on the season. J.B. Bukauskas is coming in. He's really good. Doesn't matter that we're going to finish fourth in the National League West. Ketel Marte had a bounce-back season, and everything's going to be okay. Like, those are the building blocks that you can at least to start to build the next good to great Diamondbacks team from.
Can you sell that to a fan base?
Long term, no. I don't think you can. I think
short term.
Short term, you can. Sure. Short term.
The next 4 months, can you sell that short term?
Oh, I was thinking short term, like the next month, the next two. For a whole season, can you sell?
Well, at some point,
team that's losing so many games, but so and so did really well today. You know,
I've said the trade deadline is going to be the most important date because I think that if some guy, you know, if Escobar plays well, can you trade him? If Ahmed plays well, can you trade him? If Peralta plays well, can you trade him?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not looking to trade. You're not looking to trade Ginkle or Carson Kelly, who, by the way, Carson Kelly's playing well too.
Yes, he is.
You're not looking to trade those young guys. They're a part of your future. But you do have veterans on this team, and anybody want a left-handed bat in David Peralta? Because he's for sale. Anybody want a second baseman slash short third baseman in Eduardo Escobar? Because he'll be for sale.
Yeah.
So can those guys play well enough to warrant, you know, to have a team be interested in
it? It's funny. So I just thought of it kind of this way. There are two types of individuals that we're going to root for this year for the Diamondbacks. We're going to root for guys like Ketel Marte and Zach Gallen because you know they're a part of the long-term future for the Diamondbacks. And we're going to root for guys like Eduardo Escobar and David Peralta to do well so that maybe you could dangle them around the trade deadline and get a better return, right?
Yes.
Because Escobar having a good season, the only the only way that benefits the Diamondbacks, assuming they're not going to be very good this year, is so that they can get some return for him at the trade deadline. Same thing for Peralta. Same thing for a few of the guys. You know, I mean, look, with Perdomo getting a call up, is Nick Ahmed available at the trade deadline?
This offseason?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, there's going to be a ton of free agent shortstops available this offseason.
How about Cole Calhoun?
Cole Calhoun might be available.
Cole Calhoun, if he's hitting a bunch of home runs, and somebody wants a power bat,
yeah,
good fielder, power bat, sure. Like Calhoun, Peralta, LeCastro. I mean, Tim LeCastro. It's not like Tim LeCastro's 22 years old, you know? If somebody wants Tim LeCastro, you want a speed guy? Guy's great at stealing bases. Boston Red Sox won a World Series once because of a stolen base. You know, maybe that guy could be valuable to you. If you can get something back, you got to think about it.
Yeah, when we come back on the Burns and Gambo show here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station, the Arizona Cardinals, we are 2 weeks and 1 day away from the NFL draft. Intel is starting to come in. Plus, details on the James Conner contract, and as we expected, it was a beauty. That's next on the Burns and Gambo show.
The Burns and Gambo Need to Know Twitter poll, presented by Sanderson Ford.
Sarah's here with today's Twitter poll question of the day. I have yet to see it, so it's going to be a big
look right now.
Big surprise to me.
Oh, we love a good reveal.
It's a big surprise.
Well,
what is it, Sarah?
So over the past, I don't know, week or so, Gambo has been talking more and more about not necessarily going with a cornerback or,
yes.
You know, oh, excuse me, I'm about to cough.
Achoo.
That's a strawberry seed in my throat.
Wow, get out of my belly.
That's too much information, but all right.
I couldn't just do a quick, like, that's like, right. Oh, this is going to take some time.
Yeah, it's going to take a little force to get that out of there. Okay,
yeah,
good.
I do that all the time.
He just never turns off his microphone.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I was like, I'm about to go silent, so I feel like you should know what is
Sarah
what is happening.
Sarah went dark on us. She went rogue. She coughed, and now she's back.
Yes,
all right,
we're here.
Strawberry seed dislodged. So now we're talking about the draft, and we're talking about if they don't go corner at number 16, right?
Yes. Okay. If they don't go corner or just kind of flashier positions like corner, wide receiver, Kyle Pitts, etc., would you be disappointed if the Cardinals instead use their first-round draft pick on an O lineman? Would that be disappointing to
no.
you? Yes or no?
No, I would not be disappointed with that. Offensive linemen are never have enough. You can never have enough of them. Yeah, I wouldn't be disappointed at all.
Yeah.
Be fine with that.
You know, I know that most Cardinals fans or most football fans really echo that sentiment, Burnsy. You can never have enough O-linemen or D-linemen. I didn't realize it would be this lopsided, though. 71% of our voters say nope. It would be just fine with an O-lineman.
Oh,
not a problem.
Okay, not a problem.
They would not be disappointed.
No, they would not be disappointed.
The
double negative whammy there. Okay,
they would
be happy with it, okay?
Yep. 71% would be totally cool with it. 29%. It's moving. Sorry.
Looks like strawberry seed's not the only thing you're getting stuck on there, Sarah.
Thanks. When the numbers are moving and I'm rounding up, I'm like, well, wait, did I just say 31 or did I say 30?
That's fine.
I don't know.
All right. That's a bold question. You can find it on the Burns and Gambo Twitter. Shall I play the draft profile for Elijah Vera Tucker?
And have we played it yet?
I don't believe we have. Would you like to guess who voiced the draft profile for Elijah Vera
Tucker? I'm going Sarah.
You think Sarah voiced it?
Yeah, who do you got?
Maloney. Let's see.
None of us have got one right yet.
The offensive lineman out of USC.
Elijah Vera Tucker, guard, USC.
He's what you want out of your linemen. Wide, thick, burly, and with good upper body and core strength. He consistently will place his hands correctly on the block, and they're strong enough to prevent the interior rush. Vera Tucker plays under control and has the versatility to be moved to the outside if needed and do it successfully. The knock on him would be his footwork and what happens if his hands get pushed away. But if the defense couldn't get past him the first time, good luck the second time. NFL comp, Giants guard Will Hernandez.
Okay, we have played that one before. I remember
yes,
the Will Hernandez comp. Yeah, I remember that now. That's what stood out
to me. You wouldn't
be
good
there.
At the matching game. You'd get booed at the Diamondback
game.
I
did booed. Seriously.
I get booed.
The people who 2-11, 3-11, and the whole crowd turns on them because they don't know where the purple and teal D-backs logo was and where the other purple and teal D-backs logo was. Yeah, I'd be terrible at that game, apparently. Elijah Vera Tucker, maybe, because this idea, and I was listening to Chad Reiter, who is a draft expert from NFL.com. He was on with Bickley and Marotta earlier today, and I didn't hear the whole interview, but he was kind of talking about cornerback. And boy, for the longest time, Gambo, for months now, there's been this cornerback, cornerback, cornerback kind of thing when it comes to the Cards at number 16.
Well, the two they like won't be there, I don't think.
And that's
so Surtain and Horn aren't going to be there. Now, I'm not completely ready to rule out Farley, but I doubt they're going to take him, Caleb Farley. I doubt that they would take him. Then who would you say is the fourth guy on the list?
Greg Newsom out of Northwestern.
They wouldn't take him at 16. Would not take him at 16. They would not take him at 16. So if you're not going to take Farley because of the two back surgeries, the ACL, all the concerns about Farley, if you're not going to take him, then and you're not going to take Newsom at 16. You're not. They're not going to take Newsom at 16. So now you got to look at, okay, what's the best player available? Is it a lineman? Is it a wide receiver?
Yeah.
I mean, who is it? Which is why I keep going back to Vera Tucker of USC, because if he's on the board, then that, I mean, he's clearly one of the guys they're going to be considering heavily at 16 if he's there, because he's a great player.
I think what I'll be curious to see is, and it's probably me hanging out with you for 4 hours every day doing this show, because you've got me kind of thinking along the same lines here. You know, maybe it's like that group think thing where we're just thinking the same thing. But you've got me thinking about the same thing. And you've got me really wondering now about the wide receivers in this draft. And if one of the two Bama kids are there at 16, if by some miracle either Devontae Smith or Jalen Waddle are there at 16, and I saw a mock today where Devontae Smith was, if that would be the pick over an offensive lineman. You know, like if we're having this conversation and we're building this conversation based off of a couple of ideas. Number one, that Caleb Farley's going to slip. Number two, to your point, they're not interested in Greg Newsom, and I'll play his profile here in a second. Number three, Surtain and J.C. Horn are going to be gone, okay? And number four, all three wide receivers are gone. Well, in that scenario, then it might very well be Elijah Vera Tucker, right? I mean, okay, what if one of those wide receivers? There's no way Jamar Chase has fallen.
No.
He's gone. But I've seen a couple scenarios that suggest that one of the two Bama guys could be there. I wonder what they would do if painted that scenario, you know?
Take the wide receiver.
Over the offensive lineman?
I mean, if it's one of those three, I think you might have a hard time not taking that wide receiver. But if those three are gone, see, this is the whole thing. If the top three wide receivers are gone, the top two cornerbacks are gone, and the top two tackles are gone, and then you get to, okay, you know, one of the best offensive linemen in his whole draft is Vera Tucker. He's one of the best offensive linemen. So you know if you take him, you're getting one of the best players in the draft. Do you want the fourth best wide receiver or the fifth best wide receiver? Now, you're saying if one of those guys is there, Chase, Smith, and Waddle, if it's there, well then, I mean, I don't know the answer to that.
No,
I really don't.
I'm not expecting you to know.
I would think that you'd probably go with the wide receiver.
I'm speaking more speculative at this point because I know we're still 2 weeks out from this thing. I would think you would go with the wide receiver too. I mean, I think that would just be a temptation. Now, maybe that would be, as our friend Dan Bickley likes to say, eating dessert before dinner. And maybe that would be getting yourself a want more than a need, and that Vera Tucker would represent more of a need. I want to go back to Greg Newsom. Just because it sounds like you're not completely ruling out Caleb Farley, but you are, for the most part,
at 16.
At 16.
They wouldn't take him at 16.
Okay, if there's a trade down, okay, maybe. Yeah. Let me play the draft profile from the Northwestern cornerback, ooh, Greg Newsom.
Want to guess?
Yeah, I do.
Who do you got?
I'm going to go with Maloney again.
Okay, I'll pick Sarah.
All right.
Greg Newsom II, cornerback, Northwestern.
Newsom is a scheme-diverse corner who's light on his feet. He rates well in ball tracking and body positioning when defending the deep ball. Durability is a concern, though. In his 3 years with Northwestern, injuries prevented him from ever playing a full season. But despite that, scouts expect Newsom to become a quality NFL starter within his first two seasons in the league. NFL comp, Eagles cornerback, Darius Slay.
Who picks these songs?
JV.
It's pretty good.
In production, I would imagine.
What song is that? I like that.
How does it feel? Right.
Well, that's I Can't Get You Out of My Head. Was that a Kylie Minogue jam?
Is that what it is?
It's going back almost 20 years, I think.
That's 20 years old?
I think so. Pretty close.
That's new music to me.
Oh, boy.
That's new music to me.
Oh. Oh, boy.
Yeah, that's new. I like stuff from the 60s and the 70s, like the grassroots.
Boy, oh, boy.
Something 20 years ago, that's in this century.
The whole grunge era is just unbeknownst to Gambo. He's going to
skipped right over
it for the first time.
A song that's 20 years old is new to me.
Burnsy, I heard this band. You got a Nirvana. Yeah. Oh, my God. They're so good. Curtis, they're like so good.
Curtis Cobain, a promising young talent.
Yes.
Oh, I just made you Midwestern a little bit.
Rest in peace, Kurt Cobain. Rest in peace.
That Kylie Minogue song came out in the year 2001. So
that song
is
20 years old.
Wow.
That song is 20 years old.
Mother.
Oh, my God.
Put it on your Spotify, Gambo.
I think I am.
Does it have a sample from another song, though? Because it sounds like another song.
Oh.
It sounds like it's got a beat from, like, the 80s or something. I know.
Maybe, but yeah, I was, like, this was the first exposure of that song for me, so I don't know if there was anything before that.
It felt like it had a sample from an 80s song, but I have to go back and investigate.
So the last songs I had on my iPad were Wasted on the Way by Crosby, Stills, and Nash.
Okay.
Go Your Own Way by Fleetwood Mac.
That's a good one.
I Want You to Want Me by Cheap Trick and American Pie by Don McLean. So a song from 20 years ago, is really new to me. My wife might actually listen. That's the last four songs that I listened to.
The things you learn when you listen to the Burns and Gambo show on a Wednesday afternoon. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, it's been a week now since U of A fired Sean Miller. The backlash, the criticism over the hiring process to find his replacement, it's getting big and it's getting loud. That's next on the Burns and Gambo show. Back here with you on the Burns and Gambo show on this Wednesday. This Arizona basketball coaching search is, I was talking with somebody in the building here who shall remain nameless, but who went to the University of Arizona, and it's getting a little embarrassing for some of them. It's getting a little embarrassing that apparently they knew the day the season ended that they were going to fire Sean Miller.
Okay.
And yet, for some reason, they waited a month before doing it. And then here we are a week after they fired Sean Miller, and there's no clear, apparent succession plan in place. Like some of the best programs, man, they don't make a move like that until they know exactly who they're going to move on, and they're ready to go, and they make it quick, and they strike fast, and they don't dilly-dally, and they don't wait around. And U of A, man, have you seen some of the media comments that are being made about this job search and how they've handled it?
Not a lot of them, but go ahead.
Ooh.
Read me some. I'm interested.
USA Today Sports, Dan Wolkin, quote, completely incompetent, close quote. Fox Sports Radio, quote, the worst administrative incompetence I can ever remember. West Coast Bias Sports, CJ O'Neill, incompetence and futility. Jason Shear, who we've described earlier as basically the Chris Cartman of Tucson, right?
Yes.
Chris is from SunDevilSource.com. Jason is from Wildcat Authority. Slammed the university for not having a plan when it fired Miller. Jason tweeted out, it is absolutely 100% clear that Arizona had no plan in place when it fired Sean Miller, even though it made that decision about 40 days or so ago. We still don't know who's going to be the guy. And now,
I know they reached out to another former Wildcat, Lute Olson's grandson, Matt Brace. He is, grew up, going to the games, and he was a brief assistant for U of A and Grand Canyon. Then he moved on to the Rockets coaching ladder. He was 3 years as a head coach of the G League's Rio Grande Valley Vipers. Jordan, is that them? Rio Grande Valley Vipers.
Oh yeah, G League,
yeah,
dominant
G League
program.
Yeah, and he coached there. So I've heard his name. It was in the Tucson paper. His name is out there. Josh Pastner.
His name was out there from almost the start, right? Just given his ties.
I mean, yeah. I could live with Josh Pastner. I mean, he's a good coach. He's a great recruiter. He's a good coach. You don't like that name, Sarah?
He had his own NCAA recruiting issues too, didn't he?
Memphis,
right?
Yeah,
Memphis.
Yeah, where he kind of ran afoul of the NCAA as well.
Oh, everybody runs afoul of the NCAA.
Yeah, but
it doesn't
also
matter if you get caught or not.
It's not like, oh, wow, he's taken Georgia Tech to amazing new heights. Like, not really.
People are really getting fixated on whether this is going to be a former U of A guy or not.
They won the ACC tournament title, didn't they?
When?
This year?
I remember him winning a title.
I don't know. Either way, that's like,
Okay.
Gilbert Arenas on an Instagram video with Richard Jefferson. So two former Wildcats kicking it around, right?
Okay.
And Gilbert Arenas, not the most stable of folks, but let's, you know, play his comments anyway because he is a...
Yeah, Georgia Tech won it this year.
Noteworthy. Okay. I mean, okay.
Oh, because Duke was kicked out of the tournament because of COVID. I forgot about that nugget.
Josh Pastner won the ACC tournament this year.
Okay, but it's I mean, is that U of A standards? I mean, we're talking about one of the 15 best jobs in America, right?
No.
I mean, you want a guy whose resume boasts that he won one conference tournament? I mean, you know what I mean? You don't you think you should have higher standards than that for U of A? Or no?
Yes. I mean... Damon Stoudemire is at Pastner.
Josh
Pastner is in the ACC.
I totally agree. I don't think Damon Stoudemire is that great of a candidate either. I told you that the other day when we were talking about Tommy Lloyd versus Damon Stoudemire. I don't think one good year at Pacific means, okay, here's the keys to the kingdom when it comes to one of the 20 best programs in America. I think you kind of have to be choosy about a job like this.
And, all right, let's hear these cuts.
Okay, let's hear these
cuts. Let's hear these cuts.
Gilbert Arenas with Richard Jefferson. He's going for Damon Stoudemire.
Who would you pick for the Arizona coach?
Damon Stoudemire.
Damon Stoudemire. Why Damon Stoudemire?
I mean, he's been coaching for a while now. He's established himself. You know, he's turned the whole program around, you know, where he went. So, I mean, he has the credentials. You know, okay. An assistant coach doesn't have credentials.
Shout out to you talking about Tommy Lloyd, the coach from Gonzaga?
I don't even want to say his name because he doesn't deserve it. You're an assistant coach, okay? You assist.
Wow.
You're an assistant coach.
You assist.
I got one more from Gilbert.
What did they do? They had an AAU schedule. They didn't play anybody. And then when they did play someone, they got their ass handed to them. And as an assistant coach, you should have said, hey, listen, our offense is not working today. Maybe we should just play them one-on-one since we have a number 3 pick. In this draft, let him get busy since he's actually not getting any shots.
Can I make a suggestion here?
Yeah.
Okay, let me make a suggestion. Do you think all these players are bothered by the idea of Tommy Lloyd taking the job?
Because he's not a U of A guy.
Because he's not a U of A guy, yes. And they object to the idea of a Gonzaga guy coming in and rescuing U of A when in reality, 20 years ago, it was U of A that paved the way for Gonzaga to be good when it comes to West Coast basketball. You know, like it's almost like it's beneath them. You know, Gonzaga came after us in terms of West Coast dominance in basketball. And we're going to ask a Gonzaga guy to bail us out? No, pick a U of A guy.
Maybe. I think the feeling is like, you're U of A, man. You should be able to get whoever the hell you want.
Right.
Go find a sitting coach right now and go take him. Steal him. What are we looking at these assistants for? Go pick a program that has a good coach and go get that guy. Any sitting program.
Yep.
Who did... The Loyola Chicago coach, Moser, I think his name.
Lloyd
Porter
Moser.
Porter Moser.
He just got a good gig. Was it Oklahoma or Oklahoma State? Or
I think it was Oklahoma.
I believe it was Oklahoma,
okay.
Yes.
Go take somebody.
Yeah.
Who do you like?
Go get them.
Right. Go look around the country at programs that are doing really well and go take somebody. You're U of A. You can pay $3 million a year, $3.5 million a year. Who do you like? You don't have to settle for a guy from Pacific or just pick a coach in the country at a Power 5 school that is kicking some ass and go take that guy.
Yeah.
That guy should want to come to U of A because of your history, your tradition. You put guys in the NBA. People want to play there. It's the only ticket in town. You've won a national championship. You've been to Elite Eights and Final Fours and other championship games. Like, there's no reason not to be able to go take anybody you want.
I also wonder, too, if that's kind of working against the U of A a little bit here in this one because they have so many noteworthy guys who have played in the league, right? I mean, tons. They put guys in the league all the time that those guys feel like they might have an inordinate amount of say in who should get this job because they are high-profile former U of A Wildcats, when in reality, U of A should go hire the guy that they think is the best one for the job and not worry about what Gilbert Arenas thinks or not. Now, I get it. You're counting on Gilbert Arenas to donate money. You're counting on Richard Jefferson's name is on a building down there, right? The practice gym.
Right
is,
next to McHale.
Richard Jefferson's name is on that to the point where Jefferson was asked if he's applied for the U of A job.
Did you apply for the Arizona coaching job?
No.
Sorry, I'm going to pause this. I got it backwards. Jefferson asked Gilbert Arenas if Arenas applied for the job. I'll resume this.
No, I don't think my AAU resume would have worked well.
Your 12 credits that you got in college is not your six classes.
But if the right man gets hired, I might be coming back.
Gilbert, they cannot hire a felon to coach kids.
I'm not a felon par se.
Wow.
Par se.
I'm not a felon. Oh my God, that might be. That just put itself into the top 10 all time quotes on the Burns and Gambles. I'm not a felon par se. That's immediately top 10 quotes all time, Burns and Gambles.
That is
show.
So. Could you play that again? I enjoyed it so much.
Did you apply for the Arizona coaching job?
No. I don't think my AAU resume would have worked well.
Your 12 credits that you got in college is not your six classes.
But if the right man gets hired, I might be coming back.
Gilbert, they cannot hire a felon to coach kids.
I'm not a felon par se.
Oh my God, that's so great.
I love that Richard Jefferson that knows so all great. These things about Gilbert know, and still right? is like, so did you apply? What's up?
That's great. That's really good.
Purdue, Ohio State, Tennessee. Who do you go hire one of those guys, man?
Yeah, this has been an
hire. Who do you want to hire? Go after a sitting coach that is doing a great job.
Oddly complex set of scenarios that we're dealing with here. When we come back, though, on the Burns and Gambo show, there are still some naysayers when it comes to the Suns being considered a true title contender. Dig a little deeper into their criticism, and it doesn't exactly add up. And we'll dig deep next on the Burns and Gambo show.
I'm not a felon par se.